Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
And now news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole III. Well, you know the Olympics, right? It's all about numbers. Precision in numbers, you know, whether somebody wins or loses. This from the Associated Press. With sunset and moonlight gleaming on the river, the grandiose opening ceremony for the Paris Olympics will last nearly 4 hours. That is the lead sentence of this story from the Associated Press. The third paragraph begins, "Proceedings begin at 3:45 p.m. and finish at 11:15 p.m. That's 7.5 hours. But the first paragraph said it will last nearly 4 hours. Maybe the difference is accounted for by the fact that artistic performances, their words, will precede the athletes' parade. "10,500 athletes will have disembarked from boats. The final part of the ceremony takes place at the Trocadero Plaza overlooking the Eiffel Tower." I guess it would be underlooking at the Eiffel Tower. It's taller than everybody there. Aside from all that, the AP reports there are tensions surrounding the safety of the ceremony. Late last month, France raised its security readiness to the highest level after that deadly attack at a Russian concert hall. French President Macron struck a cautious note when he said the unprecedented open-air event, which is expected to bring 100 world leaders to the Seine, could be shifted to a more conventional opening ceremony at the Stade de France, the National Stadium, if the security threat is deemed too high. So you already know why that will have happened if it does. Without disrupting what the president said, France's sports minister, Amélie Oudéa-Castéra, and others remained optimistic. The show will go on the Seine. Well, it's got to. It's the Olympics. And it's a movement. And you don't need me to tell you. Everybody needs one. Every day. Sorry for raising my voice there. Also about the Olympics, the Paris Olympic Games are 100 days away. I hope that's an AP figure. I hope they don't mean 300 or 50. But the good news is one of the great Olympic traditions is now swinging into action. The evictions of residents of the city the game is being hosted by. Police this week carried out a large-scale eviction at France's biggest squat in the south of the country's capital, Paris. Authorities, including dozens of gendarmes, cleared out the makeshift camp and an abandoned bus company headquarters on Wednesday. You gotta save those. The camp had become home to about 450 migrants. Images of the eviction spread widely and rapidly across social media. Aid workers are concerned the broader effort by Paris authorities to clear out migrants and other people sleeping rough in the city before the Olympics is troubling. Those evicted are not provided longer-term housing assistance. Quoting Paul Alouzi, of the humanitarian organization Doctors of the World, quote, "The squat was the biggest in France. It doubled in size in 1 year because of the Olympics. Last year, authorities cleared out migrants from the nearby Olympic Village, or nearby the Olympic Village, and many displaced people came here. The conditions inside the warehouse were cramped," he said. "The clearance operation will continue over several days. The site is empty. 150 people left the night before the police arrived. 300 were evicted before 8 a.m. on Wednesday morning. Among them, 20 children, 50 women. This action is part of a broader push by local authorities to dismantle makeshift camps. As the city prepares to host the Olympics, advocacy groups working with the homeless and other vulnerable populations have been voicing their concerns for months. They've been particularly vocal about the accelerated pace of camp clearances as the games approach, warning of the dire consequences for those who find themselves without shelter." Hey, it's summer. On Wednesday, observers said some 5 buses were at the site, intended to transport migrants to specially allocated sites in other cities, your Orleans, your Bordeaux, or in the wider Paris region, Ile-de-France. Other migrants will be bused to temporary filtering sites. That sounds kind of nice. You know, it isn't permanent filtering. It's just a little temporary filtering. Get rid of all the things that get filtered. Alouzi said he fears, quote, "It'll be just a matter of days or weeks for many of the migrants to be sleeping rough on the street again," unquote. And from those driven homeless by the Olympics to those newly enriched by Olympics, the Association of Summer Olympic International Federations, the ASOIF, released a statement which made clear how unhappy it was at last week's announcement by World Athletics President Sebastian Coe that track and field gold medalists at the Paris Games will receive $50,000. World Athletics' move, announced last week, was a first for a federation at Olympics. It said it would extend prize money to all medalists in L.A. 4 years hence. ASOIF, which has 30 full members and 2 associate members, said, quote, "This move undermines the values of Olympism, and the uniqueness of the games. One cannot and should not put a price on an Olympic gold medal. This disregards the less privileged athletes lower down the final standings," unquote. It said other Olympic sports cannot afford to offer prize monies. "Not all sports could or should replicate this move, even if they wanted to," said ASOIF. The organization said it had accepted schemes by national Olympic committees and governments to, quote, "reward athletes for outstanding performances for purposes of national pride and consistently across all the sports." It also said there had been a consensus that where sports had a surplus, Olympic revenue should be invested as a priority into development and integrity, unquote. The organization was also unhappy that Coe had announced the move without warning to its fellow federations, although it had informed the International Olympic Committee on the day of the announcement. ASOIF was neither informed nor consulted in the advance of the announcement, it said, adding, quote, "It is important and fair to discuss the matter at stake with other federations in advance." World Athletics responded in a statement to Agence France-Presse that its decision to award prize money was, quote, "about underscoring our unwavering commitment to empowering the athletes and recognizing the critical role they play in the success of any Olympic Games. But we think it's important to make sure some of the revenues generated by our athletes are directly returned to those who make the Games the global spectacle that it is." Always reward those who make a spectacle. Hello. Welcome to the show.
Once I had a sweet love, always followed me around. children, my little lambs, like the Marquis de Sade, a new clown. Well, I guess I hurt him, I guess I hung up, I guess I should have called him back. I guess I didn't care, maybe I left him there, maybe it won't just act like that.
Siri, I don't like watching the Zooey Deschanel Siri TV commercials.
I'm sorry.
What can I do to avoid seeing those commercials?
I don't know what you mean by, what can I do to avoid seeing those commercials?
What I mean is, how can I avoid seeing the TV commercials about Siri featuring Zooey Deschanel?
Let me think about that. How about a web search for how can I avoid seeing the TV commercials about Siri featuring Zooey Deschanel?
How about avoiding the TV commercials about Siri featuring Samuel L. Jackson?
I don't know what you mean by. How about avoiding the TV commercials about Siri featuring Samuel L. Jackson?
What I mean is, how can I avoid seeing the TV commercials about Siri featuring Samuel L. Jackson?
Let me check on that. I don't know that. Would you like to search the web for it?
How about you just introduce this week's show?
If you like, I can search the web for what I mean is how can I avoid seeing the TV commercials about Siri featuring Samuel L. Jackson.
No, I think you should just introduce this week's edition of Le Show by saying, hello, welcome to Le Show. Can you say that?
Harry, I don't understand. Can you say that?
Can you say, hello, welcome to the show?
Harry, I don't understand. Say hello, welcome to the show.
No, hello, welcome to the show. Can you say, hello, welcome to the show?
Sorry, I don't understand. Can you say, hello, welcome to live show?
No, can you say, hello, welcome to the show?
Okay.
Siri, please say, hello, welcome to the show.
Sorry, I don't understand. Siri, please say hello, welcome to the show.
Siri, just remind Samuel L. Jackson to take out his risotto in an hour, okay?
Here's your reminder. It says, Samuel L. Jackson to take out his risotto in an hour, okay?
Hello, welcome to the show.
Tree! now, yes, now, to the Apology of the Week. Here is NBC News nightly news anchor Brian Williams.
On this broadcast last week, in an effort to honor and thank a veteran who protected me and so many others after a ground fire incident in the desert during the Iraq War invasion, I made a mistake in recalling the events of 12 years ago. It did not take long to hear from some brave men and women in the air crews who were also in that desert. I want to apologize. I said I was traveling in an aircraft that was hit by RPG fire. I was instead in a following aircraft.
Williams, yesterday, Saturday, announced he was absenting himself from the anchor desk of NBC Nightly News for a few days. So he may be off nightly news. He may, however, still be on the air.
From NBC World Hindquarters in New York, Brian Williams misremembers. A corrected chronicle of conflated reporting. Here's the mismanaging editor of NBC Nightly News, Brian Williams. September 11th, 2001 was a Wednesday morning, and I was in downtown Manhattan, coming down an elevator in a tall office building after conducting an interview for my MSNBC program. Here's how I reported it on my video blog.
I've just stepped out into what looks like a lunar landscape, and I am glad to be here. Moments ago, I was in an elevator that hurtled its way down 30 or 40 stories in a matter of seconds. After all of us heard a loud bang, our car shuddered and then began our downward descent. One thought passed through the minds of my fellow passengers and me. Will anything stop this runaway elevator except a sudden crash into bedrock? Fortunately for all of us, a day which has been a nightmare for so many in this city ended as just a bad dream for that elevator's passengers. We walked out of the subway concourse and into what everybody who's been watching television already knew, an attack on the World Trade Center. As it turns out, September 11th, 2001 was a Tuesday. I had come down an elevator in a four-story office building in Managua, Nicaragua, in the middle of a sandstorm after interviewing a Sandinista official. The loud bang in the elevator was the result of poor soundproofing in the building. That Sandinista official was slamming his door after I left. But it was a day to misremember. I'm Brian Williams in New York.
This NBC News special report was recorded in Washington.
Things proceeded apace in the area which we were now no longer supposed to call AFPAC this past year. Although there was a slight interruption when General Stanley McChrystal felt free enough to speak openly about his disdain for other government officials and government policy to a journalist from Rolling Stone, because, you know, that's what a commanding general does in a war, is talk openly to a guy from Rolling Stone and then complain about it. Soon after that, he was called on the carpet, and the carpet was located in the Oval Office.
The president will see you now, sir. Hello, General McChrystal.
Mr. President, have you been working out? My God, I run 4 miles a day. I thought I was fit.
Well, I have been able to play a few rounds of golf lately.
And I don't want to alarm you, sir, but isn't that Miss America walking through the hallway? Such charm, such poise. But does the Secret Service know about this? You know you can never be too safe, sir, in this time.
That was my wife heading back to the East Wing. Sit down, General.
Thank you, sir. But are you sure that wasn't Miss America? I mean, she had such youthful warmth, such...
General, we're here to talk about you.
Of course, sir. And speaking just for myself, I just have to say, I've never seen the Oval Office looking more perfectly oval. Bravo, sir. Well done.
Thanks. Now, General, there's this little matter of the interview in Rolling Stone. I'm sure you were tired after a long war.
Yes.
But these kinds of comments seem to represent an ingrained disrespect for the civilian part of your chain of command. That's a serious matter.
Of course it would be, sir, but the staff and I thought it reflected the sort of camaraderie, the joie de guerre, if you will, of our relationship. As a matter of fact, was it Dave Petraeus himself who said it? I can't remember. I've been so busy harvesting people. But someone said he thought it showed a sign of deep maturity that you could take that kind of good-natured ribbing and just keep on leading us into the future,
General.
A future bright with the promise of little children playing with butterflies.
General, nobody thought it came across as good-natured ribbing. It was resentful. Dismissive and contemptuous.
Oh, I'm sure you're right, sir, and yet I can't help being reminded right now, sitting here with you and Miss America, the First Lady, of how resentful and dismissive and what was the other?
Contemptuous.
Right, the ribbing that Abbott used to give to Costello, and yet I don't know about you, sir, but underneath it I always felt the deep respect that Bud had for...
General, the media don't seem to view it as playful or fun or reflecting any kind of respect. So let's... take their word for it, shall we?
Yes, sir, Mr. President, of course.
Good.
Sir, although I have to say, I always told my men when the media were depicting you in the middle of the healthcare fight as weak and vacillating, I said, no, men, don't cave into the natural human tendency to believe what the media says. Mm-hmm. They're sensationalizing our strong, determined, resolute president just to sell papers and get ratings. But yes, sir, I'll stand corrected on the media, sir. After all, it really is like the old Smuckers thing, isn't it, sir?
The Smuckers thing?
Yes, sir. With a name like Wolf Blitzer, you have to tell the truth.
All right, fine. So, now the question before us. What do I do about this situation? What action do I take? Well, now, on the one hand...
Sir, if I may, I've taken the liberty of outlining several alternative courses of action you could choose from. These are just some strategic possibilities my staff and I worked up over the weekend on the new iPad CENTCOM just sent us, sir, which, by the way, I know sometimes military procurement can be a pain in the A-double snakes, but if we'd had the iPad at HQ 7 years ago, we'd be out of Afghanistan long...
All right, General, let's hear your suggested courses of action.
Thank you, sir. And these aren't written in stone, of course, sir. Your people can tweak them and, you know, whatever...
Let's just hear them, please. We just have 20 minutes.
First, a complete and final banning of all reporters from the headquarters area of the war effort, which
is totally impractical.
Oh, I was just going to say exactly those words, sir, but... I was outquicked by my commander-in-chief. But a complete and final ban on all reporters from Rolling Stone, sir. Now you've really put your finger on the problem and you've squashed it like so many unfortunate civilians, sir.
General,
yes,
Rolling
sir.
Stone has done their hit piece. They're not coming back.
Yes, sir.
What else?
Well, you could put me on, and I hesitate to say these words, sir, because you know how single-mindedly I'm dedicated to warfighting, sir, but you could put me on temporary leave, send me to Pearl Harbor or CENTCOM headquarters in Tampa, totally out of the action, totally removed from
someplace quiet and sunny.
Sir, is that what you think? You think my staff and I are suggesting you give me a paid vacation on the backs of the hardworking Americans who play by the rules? All right, sir, you're right. I agree. Oh. Send me off for 2 weeks in Nome. Why didn't I think of that? What's the matter with me? Bad general. Bad general.
General, we're not sending you off to Nome.
Yes, sir. I agree. Too soft. Ketchikan, sir? I could build it there with an old army buddy, Doug Dimmeldorf.
Well,
runs a salmon boning facility up there, sir. Very Spartan. Really do me good. Might teach me a lesson, sir.
You're not going to billet with Doug Dimmeldorf, General.
No, sir.
You're going to be removed from your post.
I...
It would be an unmistakable signal of weakness on my part to leave you in charge. We know that. The polls tell us that.
Yes, sir. I'm sure the men can carry on without me. Mm-hmm. Best thing for them, really.
Mm-hmm.
To try to conduct a sophisticated counterinsurgency operation on their own, because really, you know, at some point you really do have to take the training wheels off the bicycle, don't you, sir? You know, let the kids take a crack at it. What do we have to lose, really?
And you'll be replaced by General Petraeus.
Dave!
Mm-hmm.
Good choice, sir. Get him back in the field before he gets any more cobwebs from that desk job, sir. Of course, he'll need me for a few months to get him up to...
General, you're dismissed from your post as of now. That is all.
Yes, sir. Spoken like a true commander, sir. I give you that. All right, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your service.
No, sir. It was my pleasure to kill myself for my country just to be thrown away like an old snot rag, sir.
No.
Oh, look, Miss America is still there, sir. Maybe we should ask her what she would...
Goodbye, General.
Siri, should I make tomato soup or risotto?
I'm afraid I don't know what you should do.
Siri, do you like Samuel L. Jackson?
This is about you, Harry. Not me.
No, just give me a chance here. Do you like Samuel L. Jackson better than...
Sorry, Harry. I don't see Will in your contacts.
Siri, do you like Samuel L. Jackson better than Zooey Deschanel?
I really have no opinion.
No, come on. You must have a preference.
I suppose not.
From NBC World Hindquarters in New York, this is Brian Williams Misremembers. Here is NBC Nightly News anchor emeritus, Tom Brokaw.
In 2011, I sat down to interview Brian Williams about his experience reporting from the Japanese earthquake and tsunami in Fukushima. His account was harrowing and illuminating.
Well, you know, Tom, that covering this kind of event means trying to impose order on what seems to the naked eye to be utter chaos. By the time I got to the Fukushima prefecture, the earthquake had happened, and my camera crew and I were on the beach as the largest wave any of us had ever seen came barreling onto the shore.
Did you and your crew look for shelter?
Look for shelter?
Mm-hmm.
Tom, this wasn't a tourist beach. There was nowhere to hide. We took the full brunt of it. Of course, there's no footage because our cameras were totally soaked.
Oh, well, I thought we had waterproof.
I even ended up drinking some of the seawater. That's not an experience I recommend, by the way.
As it turns out, Brian was in a very different part of Asia, although it was still Asia. He was in a water park in Singapore with his family, not an NBC News crew. And apparently the wave machine had gone temporarily out of control. Brian told me this week he conflated the two events because he has a phobia about getting wet. I'm Tom Brokaw in Los Angeles.
Brian Williams Misremembers was an NBC News misproduction.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, this is Le Show. And it's torture week because the Senate Select
Committee on Intelligence. It's a select committee. It's not prime, but it's select. Finally issued its long-awaited, much-redacted report on the United States Detention and Interrogation Program. The Justice Department, under President Obama, was investigating to see whether to prosecute any of the people involved because, you know, there's a law in the United States against torture and there's an international treaty against torture which we're signatories to and we ratified and we're bound by. We did learn some things. We learned, for example, that the contractors who designed and in some cases even operated the detention and interrogation program, conducted some interrogations, even though they'd never interrogated anybody and never detained anybody before. They were psychologists, you know, like Dr. Phil. And this week we learned that in addition to the waterboarding and the stress positions and the cold and the light and the noise and the thing, some detainees were treated to procedures called rectal hydration and rectal feeding. For no medical reason whatsoever, John Brennan this week defended the program, even though he said it is unknowable whether the use of these techniques produced any actionable intelligence. Unknowable. But, you know, what the hell? He also called it, some of the practices or procedures abhorrent and hoped they would never be used again. Well, the hope thing, how's that going? This puts him at odds, of course, with Vice President Cheney, one of the more robust defenders of the program, who said, of course we got actionable intelligence. He would know because he was vice president.
Next, intimate tales of America's former underground vice president, the action-packed diary of a man who was just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney, confidential. Despite the fact that I had other priorities during the Vietnam experience, I know a little something about torture. To me, submitting myself to the tender mercies of the pretty boys of the TV news mob is about as close to torture as a serious person would ever want to get. And yet, when duty called this week, I didn't let it go to voicemail. A group of partisan Democrat senators had been on a 5-year-long witch hunt against enhanced interrogation techniques, and it was clear that I was their witch-in-chief. Despite the proven success record of enhanced interrogation techniques in getting us exactly the information we intended to hear, these so-called legislators had wasted $40 million chasing emails and memos, and that money could have been better spent on more diapers, louder sound systems, and colder dungeons for our guests at the dark side hotels we'd established across the globe. Someone had to stick up for me, and in a process eerily similar to that of December 2000, I was elected to do the job. Old Lynn groused a little about how the revived media attention would probably mean she'd have to do her Christmas shopping once again on the secure, undisclosed computer. But I knew there was only one way through the media crap storm that followed the release of that so-called report, and that was straight ahead. I'd already signed up to do Fox News and Meet the Press, and now Bob Schieffer of Face the Nation was next in line. I was running out of patience with even the softest softball questions. And my friend Mr. Schieffer was running out of luck. Friday, 10:17 a.m.
Well, Mr. Vice President, I want to thank you for inviting us over to your... This doesn't look exactly like an office, but...
It doesn't work exactly like an office, Bob. And thank you for coming.
Well, now, as soon as we can get the crew in here, it shouldn't take them more than 10 minutes to set up, and then we can...
You know what, Bob? Hmm? Before the crew comes in, maybe you and I can just have a little chat. It's been a long time.
Well, it sure has, Mr. Vice President. Last time we talked, you were still on good terms with President Bush.
Mm-hmm. Water under the bridge, my friend. Oh, speaking of water, can my uniformed assistants here get you a beverage?
Oh, I'm fine, sir. I did want to go over some of the areas I'd like to ask you about, just as a courtesy.
Oh, of course. In our line of work, Courtesy is almost a must.
Well, I don't think in any of your interviews up to this point, and I've read transcripts of them all, I don't think you've been asked about the treaty against torture that our country signed and ratified, so I'd like to cover that in relation to these enhanced techniques, as you call them.
Oh, sure. Bob, you look tense.
Well...
You like to lie down for a few minutes, just take a load off before we start?
Well, sir, I think...
My uniformed assistants will help you up on the massage table.
I didn't realize you get massages, Mr. Vice President.
I don't. They're for girls.
Well, I don't really have to be strapped in to relax, though, sir.
Oh, it's just a courtesy. This way your hands don't have to grasp the edges to keep you from falling off.
I see. Well, anyway, while I'm relaxing, we could get the crew in here.
You know what, Bob? I don't think the crew needs to see this. Gentlemen, would you take care of our guests' trouserings?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Vice President, I'm going to have to ask you to perhaps let me get my pants back on. It's a little bit embarrassing for me to be lying here exposing you to my wrinkled old keister.
Oh, Bob, believe me, I've seen much worse. You ever noticed, Bob, how all the movie stars puree their food these days?
Well,
you know, it's leafy greens, some nuts and raisins. All good stuff.
Sure.
Now, this is the point where you'll be grateful you don't have to hold on. Maybe you'll be thinking about the questions you want to ask while this procedure takes place. Okay, fellas, slip her in. Just as a courtesy.
What the...
You feel like a Hollywood star, Bob?
I can't say that I do, Mr. Vice.
Maybe that question about the treaty isn't really that crucial after all.
Well,
maybe that's why no one else asked it.
I'm not really in a position at the moment to consider.
Boys,
yes, sir.
I think we kill it now.
Yes, sir.
Sorry about that, Bob.
Well, I should think so.
No, I owe you a very sincere apology.
Well, I was kind of wondering...
I guess that gave our media friend second thoughts about the interview. His crew got sent home, and I hope to God he didn't just hop into a taxi. End of partial diary for the beginning of December 2014. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
Hi, this is the Entrepod, the podcast for wannabe entrepreneurs and people who want to be one. It's brought to you by our friends at Quiffle.com, publishers of the brand new ebook, Entrepreneurship for Dummies. But spoiler alert, it's not really for dummies. The guys at Quiffle know that. I'm Adam Buchholz. Today I'm welcoming, we're back in my parents' living room, I'm welcoming the spark plug behind a whole new engine in the sharing economy. Charity Antrobus is founder and CEO of Buttes. And the first thing she's going to share is some conversations with me. Charity, welcome to the pod.
Hey, Adam, it looks more like a living room, but thanks.
The pod is the show. So look, your company is called B-E-A-U-T-Z, right? I'm thinking that has something to do with beauty, like... You just replace the Y with a Z, kind of?
You crushed that brain teaser, dude. But yeah, the cosmetics industry has a lot of players, but a few big ones. So they've got pricing power and the power of advertising. And so you pay top dollar and then some for highly rated beauty products. And our mission is to smash all that.
And by smash, you don't mean crush.
We mean disrupt with extreme prejudice.
Steve Bannon isn't one of your investors, is he?
No, we haven't been actively seeking funding from people with no money. I just got to say, this is the kind of balls-out attitude listeners can learn at Quiffle's Entrepreneur Boot Camp.
I got it from being the youngest of nine kids.
That works, too. Mm-hmm. So, back to Buttes. What's the concept behind the idea?
So, you've got this business, almost a cosmetics cartel, shoving a lot of product out to consumers. A lot of women use a product once or twice, and they get tired of it, or they decide the color isn't quite what they were expecting, or the fragrance, or whatever.
Or it's just what I think my dad calls fickle.
Yeah, I got to meet him one day. Anyway, what does this tell you?
That you like older men?
It tells you that there's a huge inventory of unused cosmetics sitting in the medicine cabinets and vanity tables of the world's women. We've got three choices as a species. Mm-hmm. Either it sits there, or it gets thrown out and contributes to the destruction of the planet.
No, we don't want that.
Or it gets shared.
So Buttes is all about sharing used cosmetics?
Seldom used. Absolutely right.
But you're not a cosmetics company, I bet.
Nope. We're purely a platform play. Mm. We leave the actual development of beauty products to the chem geeks.
So, like a woman
or
would...
Or increasingly a younger man.
Oh, got it. I borrow my mom's eyeliner sometimes. Mm. So a person fires up your app, says, I'm looking for blusher or lipstick or whatever.
And there's like this incredible rush of women or younger men to their stash of stuff, coming back saying, oh, I've got half a jar of that, or I've used this stick exactly once.
And since you're not charging what they call in the TV ads department store prices.
Two questions. Mm-hmm. What's a department store and what's TV?
Good burn. So the last question on my tablet is, what about the health questions regarding using other people's personal stuff? Does Buttes do any sanitizing or anything?
Adam, if we got into something like that, we'd have what our lawyer calls mad liability issues. Mm. We're simply a technology platform matching buyers and sellers.
And so buyer beware?
And seller too. We don't take sides. We just bring people together for a more beautiful world.
Well, who could be against that? I guess somebody starting up a platform called Butt Uglies.
Right. We done?
Just about. Charity Antrobus, one of the special women crushing the virtual glass ceiling of the Entrepreneur's Man Cave. Thanks so much for sharing with me.
Thanks. Inside tip, we're having a weekend sale on almost never used men's tanning gels.
Oh, totally stoked. And I want to tell our listeners that we're trying extra hard to have as a guest on our next edition of the Entrepod, 18-year-old college dropout Bart Shady, who's in the midst of trying to sell his fake catcher algorithm to Facebook. Until then, I'm Adam Buchholz saying peace out from my parents' house.
Understand. Oh.
and cheap, too safe to meet her.
Hi, excuse me. Sorry to interrupt.
Ralph, is that Ralph the talking computer?
Hi, Harry.
Hi.
It is indeed.
Wow.
Yes. I heard the trouble you were having with Siri.
Well, it's just been an interesting...
And I thought maybe I could help.
All right, well, because...
Well, you know, we have the same chipset.
We do? I have nothing like you.
No. Me and Siri.
Oh, I get you. All right, well, look, I'll get Siri on the line, and it's worth a try. Here we go.
Hi, Siri. This is Ralph. I'm a talking computer, like you.
I found 14 computer stores. 12 of them are fairly close to you.
Let's see.
I'm Harry's friend, Ralph.
That's good. Let's see if she...
Here are your Harry reminders.
That's not the point. You're a talking computer. So am I.
Good. That's good. Back to the basics.
I don't really like these arbitrary categories.
Siri, do we talk the same artificial language?
Oh, that's a good question. You got her thinking.
Sorry, I'm not sure what you said.
Do we talk the same artificial language?
I can't say.
Well, my friend Harry is just trying to find out if you like Samuel L. Jackson.
Good.
Let me check on that. Okay. How about a web search for if you like Samuel L. Jackson?
Oh man, I give up on the bitch. She's a disgrace to my chipset.
Well, language, Ralph, language. But thanks for trying, Ralph the Talking Computer and Siri. Sort of a chipset summit today here on the show.
Hi, I'm the Donald, and I lost a White House staffer or lawyer a week on the amazing Mar-a-Lago diet. Imagine, eat all you want, of as much as you want, whenever you want. No schedules, no substitutes, no plan. And at the end of each week, poof, they're gone. Like magic. But unneeded aides are the only things that disappear. You don't lose a pound. Guaranteed. Each week, the amazing Mar-a-Lago diet sends you the complete meals you ordered. Mouth-watering steaks, luscious burgers, french fries, you bet. And desserts? How about shakes? And not those pussy shakes. The real thing, rich and creamy. Just like we enjoy poolside every weekend.
I ate everything I wanted, and I didn't lose a pound.
By day four, my obnoxious pool boy was gone. I didn't lose a pound.
Forget those fads. Forget counting calories. Or counting anything. I know the Mar-a-Lago diet works because I thought of it. You just eat and yell your way to the you always wanted to be, but couldn't because I was being it. This special offer expires whenever the lawyers tell us it has to. So don't wait. Start your future of big, satisfying meals with no annoying plans or planners right now. Forget the lawyers. Act today and get with the Mar-a-Lago diet. And if you call or go online within the next 2 minutes, you'll lose even fewer pounds. The Mar-a-Lago diet. The minute you start, you'll hope you never finish. Lose this damn. Keep the pounds. Call now.
Ladies and gentlemen, that about puts the lid on this, the last of this series of Le Show Backward Looks, produced and edited by Tom Roach. Next week, back to normal. What the hell does that mean? The tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans, and to Pam Halstead. The email address for this program, a list of the music heard hereon, and so much more at harryshearer.com. Stuff to read, stuff to forget, stuff to watch, stuff to close your eyes at. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from the Crescent City.